You've probably felt it. That really specific stomach-dropping moment where you just blink, and the software project that used to take you and your team an entire month to build is suddenly, expected on your manager's desk by
Oh,
Friday.
yeah, we've all been there.
Right. And there is no extra headcount coming. There are no extra hours in the day. It's just this, there's just a completely new, arguably terrifying baseline for what humanly possible actually looks like.
It really is terrifying if you aren't prepared for it.
It is. So today we have our hands on a playbook from Vibe Coding Masters. It's titled Vibe Coding Productivity Tips for Developers, and it's looking ahead to 2026.
Which is, I mean, it's highly relevant right now.
Exactly. And we are going to tear it apart in this deep dive to figure out how the developers who are surviving this paradigm shift are actually pulling it off. Because for you listening, this isn't just some shopping list of
No,
tools.
not at all.
It's a manual on the raw discipline of AI-assisted coding. We're covering the psychology of prompt engineering, highly specific workflows, and just the reality of how to behave when a machine is doing the typing for you.
Yeah, the behavioral shift is massive.
Okay, let's unpack this, because we really need to confront the sheer speed of modern development right now. The playbook argues that the bar for what we call fast has fundamentally moved. We are talking about feature delivery schedules compressing from weeks down to literally days.
Yeah, the underlying math of software development has basically been rewritten by these tools.
Wow.
And the playbook attributes this compression to three distinct shifts in the daily workflow. The first one is the elimination of the blank page.
Right.
Tasks like writing boilerplate code or, scaffolding out basic CRE structures.
Which means the logic to create, read, update, and delete data, right?
Exactly, yeah. That used to consume hours of rote mechanical typing. But developers are now generating those foundational skeletons in seconds.
It's kind of the digital equivalent of buying a pre-framed house instead of like chopping down the trees yourself.
That is a perfect way to capture the time savings, honestly.
Yeah.
So the second shift is the collapse of context switching. Historically, developers lived in this really fragmented ecosystem.
Oh, totally. You write code in your editor, you hit a wall, you open a browser.
Right, you dig through documentation, you scroll through Stack Overflow.
You completely lose your train of thought.
Yes, and then you try to get back into a flow state, which takes forever. But now, with AI chat and inline assistants living directly inside the integrated development environment, the IDE, the answers, actually come to the developer. The whole problem-solving loop is just contained.
That makes a huge difference.
It really does. And finally, the source highlights this idea of democratized debugging.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
Well, when an application crashes, it spits out a massive cryptic stack trace.
Right, a giant wall of error text.
Exactly. Modern assistants can analyze that entire error log right in the context of your code base and immediately point to the broken variable.
Now, hold on a second, because the playbook also cites the Stack Overflow 2025 survey regarding this exact dynamic.
Oh, yeah, the trust data.
Right. That survey found that while developers admit AI dramatically reduces their task time, their actual trust in the code being generated hasn't kept pace at all.
Not even close.
It makes me think of this new workflow like hiring a hyperactive, incredibly eager sous chef for a Michelin star kitchen.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Like they can prep 100 onions a minute, which sounds amazing, but if you don't taste the soup before it goes out to the dining room, you might realize they swap the sugar for salt and ruin the entire dish.
Right.
So, does AI actually help us debug, or does it just confidently invent significantly more complicated explanations for why the code is broken?
So the Stack Overflow data quantifies that exact anxiety. The playbook calls this the trust gap.
The trust gap.
Yeah. Because AI models are probabilistic engines, right? They predict the next most likely sequence of tokens.
Right.
Sometimes that prediction is a brilliant bug fix, but other times it is a highly plausible hallucination that leads you down a 3-hour rabbit hole of fixing a problem that doesn't actually exist.
Oh man, that is the
It
worst.
really is. So the core thesis of the Vibe Coding Master's Guide is that massive speed gains only hold up when they are paired with borderline paranoid human review habits.
Paranoid review.
Exactly. The productivity doesn't come from ignoring the code. It comes from shifting your cognitive load away from the physical act of writing syntax and redirecting all that saved energy into architectural review.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting, because the bottleneck isn't the AI's intelligence anymore,
Right.
and it isn't the developer's typing speed. It's the environment they're working in. the playbook moves from the theory of speed into the actual landscape of tools dominating 2026, and the roster is incredibly specific.
It is. The tools dominating the market have really diverged into distinct philosophies.
Like what?
Well, you have GitHub Copilot, which integrates directly into standard environments like VS Code.
Mm-hmm.
It is built for localized speed, you know, inline completions as you type.
Right. Fast and focused.
Exactly. Then you have Cursor, which is an entirely separate fork of VS Code built from the ground up for AI-native workflows. The standout feature there is codebase-aware chat and multi-file agent edits.
Okay, let's break that down for a second. Codebase-aware means the AI isn't just looking at the single file I have open on my screen, right?
Correct.
So how does it actually know what's happening in the rest of my project?
Under the hood, tools like Cursor create a mathematical index of your entire project using a technique called retrieval augmented generation, or RAD.
Ah, RAD.
Yes. So when you ask it to change a user authentication flow, it doesn't just look at the login button. It actively searches your backend server files, your database schemas, and your API routes to understand how that button connects to everything else.
Oh, wow. So it maps all the dependencies?
Exactly. Then there's Windsurf, which introduces autonomous background agents.
Background agents, like while you're working.
Yeah. So while a developer is fixing a typo in one file, Windsurf can be running a background cloud session to execute a test suite, identify a failing test, and actually draft a potential fix in a separate tab simultaneously.
That is wild. Yeah. And outside of those dedicated IDEs, the playbook lists the general purpose heavyweights.
Right.
ChatGPT for high-level architecture discussions, Gemini for its deep integration into Google Cloud environments, meaning it actually understands your cloud deployment permissions, which is huge, and Claude.
Yeah, Claude has really become the tool of choice for heavy lifting. That's largely due to its massive context window and its capacity for multi-step reasoning.
So what are people using Claude for mostly?
A lot of developers are using it for things like legacy migrations. You can feed Claude the entirety of a 10-year-old poorly documented Java application and just ask it to untangle the logic before you attempt to rewrite it in a modern framework like React.
But looking at the pricing models, the source listed for this tool stack, the math gets intimidating fast.
It really does add up.
I mean, Copilot Pro Plus is sitting at $39 a month. Cursor Ultra goes up to $200 a month. Windsurf Max is also $200 a month.
Yeah.
And the playbook heavily recommends this strategy of rotating between different models depending on the task. If I'm a developer, do I really need to juggle a $200 Cursor subscription, a Claude subscription, and Copilot?
That's crazy.
It sounds less like buying a hammer and more like trying to manage a highly specialized, very expensive roster of mercenaries.
Yeah.
Like, we are trading context switching in our code for context switching between five different subscription plans.
The sticker shock is a very common reaction, absolutely.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating here is how the source frames this under the concept of matching the tool to the task.
Okay, unpack that.
Developers are rotating models because different AI systems have entirely different cognitive profiles. No single tool is a silver bullet.
So break down these cognitive profiles. Why can't I just use the most expensive one for everything?
Well, think about the mechanics of the work. Copilot acts like an extension of your fingers, right? It is optimized for latency, delivering instantaneous autocomplete suggestions for the next three lines of code. It is a sprinter.
Okay, a sprinter. That makes sense.
But if you have a reasoning-heavy task, like mapping out the security implications of a new payment gateway across 50 different files, a fast autocomplete tool will just stumble. It lacks the attention span.
Right.
For that, you bring in Claude, which is a marathon runner. It processes massive amounts of information and thinks in sequential, logical steps.
Ah, I see.
When developers view that combined $300 a month expense, not as a software license, but as the salary for a tireless 2047 junior developer who could instantly switch from sprinting to marathon running, the economics of juggling subscriptions suddenly become the highest leverage investment a team can make.
But that leverage only exists if you actually know how to talk to this tireless junior developer, which brings us to the communication layer. The playbook calls prompt engineering the single highest leverage skill in vibe coding today. The days of typing make me a cool website and just crossing your fingers are completely over.
Oh, completely over.
Yeah.
Vague instructions guarantee vague, unusable code.
Right.
The source mandates context-rich prompting. If you want a useful output, you have to provide the specific file name, the function signature you are modifying, the exact data inputs you expect, and the edge cases the machine needs to handle.
The source also stresses specifying the shape of the answer. They mention asking for a diff instead of a full script.
Yes, that's crucial.
And for anyone who hasn't stared at a terminal lately, a diff is basically just the exact lines of code that were added or subtracted, usually highlighted in green and red. It prevents the AI from spitting out a 500-line file where you have to play a miserable game of spot the difference to figure out what it actually changed.
It saves so much time. Providing constraints up front is another non-negotiable. You have to define the language version, the specific framework, and your team's internal style conventions before you ask for the code.
I noticed the playbook also highlights the sheer power of negative examples.
Yes, that is such a good tip.
Like explicitly telling a model, do not use any external third-party libraries for this date calculation, only use native JavaScript, is often more effective than telling it what you want it to do.
Because it artificially narrows the AI's search space, right? Mm-hmm. It prevents it from hallucinating a solution based on outdated practices it scraped from the internet.
Okay, but then the playbook drops what feels like a massive contradiction. For complex logic, they say you must ask the AI for a written reasoning or implementation plan before it writes a single line of code. You force it to draft a blueprint.
Right.
If I push back here, it feels like hiring a film crew, flying everyone out to the desert, and then spending 3 weeks forcing the director to draw stick-fetch storyboards instead of just turning on the cameras.
I can see how it feels that way.
If the entire premise of vibe coding is blistering speed, isn't writing a highly detailed spec, demanding a written plan, reviewing that plan, and then sending tiny iterative prompts actually significantly slower than just saying, build the shopping cart feature?
Well, it creates the illusion of moving slower, definitely. But we have to look at why large prompts fail mechanically.
Okay, why did they fail?
When you feed a large language model a massive, sprawling request to build an entire feature at once, its attention mechanism gets diluted.
Diluted how?
By the time it is writing the database logic at the end of its response, it has mathematically lost focus on the security constraints you gave it in the very first sentence. The playbook advocates for chaining small prompts because it forces the AI to maintain strict attention on one tiny problem at a time.
So if you just yell action and try to shoot the whole 2-hour movie in one take, the actors forget their lines, the lighting breaks, and the whole thing is a total disaster. You have to shoot it scene by scene.
Precisely. If you let the AI build the entire feature in one shot, it will weave a fundamental architectural flaw deep into the foundation of the code.
And you won't even see it.
Right. You won't realize it until the application crashes in production. And then you will spend 3 days untangling a web of AI-generated spaghetti code just to find the one line that caused the failure. The perceived slowdown of drafting a plan and chaining small prompts prevents catastrophic time losses during the debugging phase. It is about predictable velocity, not reckless speed.
And reckless speed leads directly into the productivity traps.
It does.
The playbook outlines what happens when developers ignore this deliberate pacing, and it varies heavily depending on what part of the stack they are working on. The universal traps are brutal, though.
Very brutal.
Like blindly accepting AI output without reading it, which they identify as the primary driver of hidden security vulnerabilities. Or skipping automated tests because of a false sense of security, and bypassing human reviews for highly sensitive areas like authentication, payments, or user data.
Those are the universal failure modes, yeah. But the source provides highly tactical advice for specific layers of the software stack, too.
Right, like the front end.
Exactly. In front end development, where you are dealing with the user interface, a major workflow tip is scaffolding components comprehensively. You don't just ask the AI for a button.
You ask for the whole package.
Right. You ask it to generate the button, define the prop types, which are the strict rules dictating what kind of data that button is allowed to accept, and write the basic visual tests all in one chained prompt.
They also emphasize using AI for dedicated accessibility passes, like verifying ARIA labels, which ensure the application can be navigated by screen readers for visually impaired users.
It's fantastic for accessibility checks.
Then you move to the back end, which is the unseen engine of the app, and the stakes get so much higher. The playbook talks about generating those CRU'd endpoints alongside their validation logic, enumerating weird edge case tests that humans usually just don't have the patience to write, and using AI to decipher and refactor legacy code.
Yeah, that legacy code refactoring is huge.
They actually mention that Vibe Coding Masters runs hands-on courses over in Hyderabad specifically to train teams on mastering these back-end workflows.
They do.
But I want to zero in on one specific back-end tip the source mentions: letting AI draft database migration scripts.
Oh, yeah. This is a big one.
Because, look, Centering a div on a front-end website is one thing. If the AI messes that up, the button looks a little weird. But letting a machine draft a script that permanently alters the structure of a live production database? I mean, that sounds like letting an autonomous drone perform open-heart surgery on your company's nervous system.
That is a vivid image, but accurate.
Right. If it severs the wrong artery, the patient bleeds out instantly, and your company's entire data history is just gone. So how do we keep the AI from accidentally dropping the production database?
By enforcing absolute, non-negotiable boundaries. The playbook anchors its advice here on the principle of trust but verify.
Trust but verify?
Yes. The rule is that any logic touching money, authentication, or database migrations must undergo manual, line-by-line human review. The AI is utilized here purely as a scaffolding tool.
So it writes the boring stuff, but it doesn't make the call.
Exactly. A developer might use it to draft the tedious SQL syntax required to add a new column to a database table, saving them from looking up the exact formatting for the 100th time. But the AI is not making the architectural decision about how that data relates to the rest of the system. The human engineer is still the surgeon holding the scalpel. The AI is just the nurse handing them the requested tools.
Okay, so the human is the ultimate safety net. The code gets generated, it runs through an automated testing pipeline in a safe environment, and a human reviews it before it ever touches real customer data.
That's the workflow, yeah.
But this brings up a massive structural problem. So what does this all mean for how we actually measure whether a developer is doing a good job? If we are working in these careful, highly prompted, review-heavy workflows, the old metrics have to be completely obsolete.
Oh, they are worse than obsolete. They are actively dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah. The source states clearly that measuring raw output volume metrics, like how many lines of code a developer writes or how many pull requests they merge, is a terrible way to evaluate performance in 2026. Generating 500 lines of code is trivial now. It just means the developer held down the accept key on their AI assistant.
You're just measuring how fast the hyperactive sous chef can chop vegetables, completely ignoring how much food is being thrown in the garbage because it's inedible.
That is exactly it, which is why the playbook introduces a new set of metrics focused on quality and flow.
Like what?
First is cycle time, which tracks how long it takes for a task to go from being started to being safely deployed to users. Then the defect escape rate, which measures how many AI-generated bugs are successfully slipping past your review process and making it into production.
Okay, those make sense.
They also prioritize time to first review, tracking how quickly a human steps in to provide meaningful feedback on generated code. And perhaps the most critical new metric of all, the rework rate.
The rework rate, meaning how often does the code the AI wrote need to be drastically rewritten by a human after it was initially accepted?
Exactly that. If a developer's rework rate is high, it is a glaring signal that they are either writing poor prompts, failing to chain their requests, or just blindly accepting code without understanding the architectural implications.
And those implications are scaling rapidly. I mean, the source cites analyst forecasts predicting that AI might be writing roughly half of all new software code by the end of 2026.
Half. It's wild to think about.
And it outlines a major industry shift from the loose improvisational concept of vibe coding towards something called agentic engineering. Yeah. This is where AI agents operate inside tightly bounded, well-tested environments with strict governance.
Right, agentic engineering.
But wait, if AI is writing 50% of the code by the end of this year, and we still have this massive trust gap we talked about, aren't we just building massive piles of technical debt faster than ever before in human history?
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture, that exact fear is the catalyst for the shift toward agentic engineering. The playbook argues that moving forward, the true differentiator for successful software companies will not be their raw adoption of AI.
Because everyone has it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone has access to the same language models. The competitive advantage will entirely be based on a team's governance, their automated testing infrastructure, and their security tooling.
Governance in this context, meaning the automated rules that say, if this AI-generated code drops our test coverage below 90%, the system automatically rejects it and deletes it.
Correct. Governance is the guardrail. AI is an amplifier of existing engineering culture. If you drop these tools into a team with poor testing discipline and a habit of cutting corners, the AI will simply help them write broken, unmaintainable software at light speed.
It just scales up the mess.
Exactly. But if you give these tools to a team with rigorous standards, the AI scales that excellence. Agentic engineering restricts the AI to a bounded task, wraps its output in automated tests, and relies on a human architect to oversee the final integration.
Okay, bringing all of these threads together. Vibe coding, at least the professional version outlined by Vibe Coding Masters, isn't about kicking your feet up and letting the machine build your startup while you drink coffee.
Oh no, definitely not.
It is a highly disciplined practice of precision prompting, taking the time to chain small, logical steps together, building relentless automated testing pipelines, and maintaining rigorous human review.
It fundamentally changes the developer's job description.
Yeah, you are migrating away from the manual labor of typing boilerplate syntax and evolving into a system architect, a security reviewer, and a validator of machine logic.
The transition from writer to editor is really the defining shift of this era. But I'm going to leave a final thought hanging in the air for you to think about, stemming from a very subtle warning the source gives about something called architectural drift.
Architectural drift.
Yeah. We have established that the future involves AI handling the localized coding, the boilerplate, and the repetitive syntax, right?
Mm-hmm.
While the human developers step in for the high-level review and architectural steering. But consider the long-term implication. If no human is actually writing the foundational glue of an application today, what happens to a team's collective understanding of their own system 5 years from now?
Oh, wow.
It invokes the mystery of Roman concrete.
Roman concrete?
Yeah. The ancient Romans built structures that have lasted for millennia, but because the foundational knowledge of how to mix that specific concrete wasn't perfectly preserved, humanity completely lost the ability to replicate it for centuries.
That's crazy.
So if the humans only ever perform the high-level review, and the machine is left to endlessly pour the foundational concrete of our digital infrastructure, will anyone truly know how to fix the core architecture when the AI eventually encounters a problem it can't solve?
That is a wildly unsettling thought. It's like discovering your AI assistant wrote a brilliant best-selling novel, but they wrote the underlying manuscript in a language you only partially understand, and now your manager is demanding you write the sequel by yourself.
Exactly. It deeply underscores why that human review step isn't just about catching today's bugs.
Right. It is about ensuring we retain the actual comprehension of the systems we are building for tomorrow. Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Whether you are scaffolding a new front-end interface or trying to keep an autonomous drone from performing open-heart surgery on your database, I encourage you to start building and refining your own personal prompt library today. We'll catch you on the next one.